Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Announce Table. Yes, a professional wrestling podcast covering the significant events in professional wrestling. My name is Brad Gilmore, and I'm joined again by
Mr. Hubbard.
Mr. Hubbard, look at you.
I'm gonna be a little bit more formal for the street, you know.
Oh yeah, this is a big episode. We're off the heels of our last episode covering the Montreal Screwjob. Fans, if y'all haven't listened to that, go add the old episode on iTunes because y'all got to hear it. Me and Kyle Hubbard spent an hour plus talking about Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. Amazing show. And during that podcast, we talked about maybe doing a streak podcast. And it only makes sense. WrestleMania is upon us. We're on the road to WrestleMania.
Officially.
Royal Rumble was just a couple weeks ago. And now we are going to talk about the streak. Wrestling fans, when you hear the streak, are you here 21-0? You only think about one thing and one man. That is The Undertaker. Kyle, why don't you tell them what the streak is?
The streak is one of the greatest institutions in professional wrestling today and of all time. WrestleMania, which everybody listening should be aware is the equivalent of the Super Bowl in professional wrestling. Every WrestleMania, Undertaker, since WrestleMania 7, with some few exceptions, has gone up against somebody and has won consistently
Yes.
for 21 times in a row, has never lost at WrestleMania.
God, 21 times. You know,
21
so,
times.
And he hasn't wrestled at every single WrestleMania, so then you have to think, wow, that means, you know, he's been wrestling, you know, for more than 21 years. Is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
for sure.
It's ridiculous.
And, so his first appearance was at 7. His most recent one was at 29. But there is a few years that he was not at WrestleMania. I just want to make that clear.
Yeah. So it's not 21 straight WrestleManias, but it's 21
right.
victories at
right,
WrestleMania,
right.
which is just a huge deal. It's like, you know, I want to know kind of, and we'll probably get into this, but like the streak does cover, like he defeated 18 different superstars in that 21-0 streak. There were some repeats, but 18 different superstars, four no disqualification matches, three world title matches, two Hell in a Cell matches, a handicap match, and a casket match, all at WrestleMania.
No one else can say that.
That's a lot.
No one else can say that. You know, and the greatest thing about the streak is it, like you were, I think you were getting at, is just the generations that it covered. You know, starting with Jake the Snake and going all the way to CM Punk. Like
starting with Snuka.
Oh, starting with Snuka, correct. I'm sorry about that.
It's all
but
good.
Still, even more so.
Yeah.
Even more so, you know, going back to that old generation and coming right up to the modern generation. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and there's not really a huge star, like, that he really didn't face. I mean, with the exception of Hulk Hogan, and maybe even, you know, John Cena, but it's just like he just got everybody in this at WrestleMania, like the biggest show of the year, not to mention all the young guys that he worked with and put over in the latest part of his career. And when I say put over, I don't mean he lost to them. I mean, he put them over by letting them come to the ring with him.
Right. Undertaker is one of the rare cases where he can put you over and still win and make you look like a million bucks.
Yeah, and you got to think, like, Undertaker, you know, from just, you know, stories I've talked about with other, you know, superstars, with Booker and other things, Undertaker is, like, the guy in the locker room. Like, the WWE champion is the company's number one guy, but Undertaker will always be the guy, you know, backstage at wrestling events. He's garnered so much respect, mainly for, you know, keeping the integrity of the business at all times, always putting the business before everything else, you know what I mean, making sure all the traditions are honored, and he's just one of those superstars, one of those wrestlers who I don't think they make anymore. You know, he's just so well respected because, I mean, he's just the man. He's the Undertaker.
Yeah, no, he certainly, just from anything that I've gathered from other wrestlers speaking about him, whether it be DVDs I listen to, other podcasts, anything like that, there's always a huge amount of respect and just they admire this guy. You know, he really is like the pack leader. Like, I think a lot of people look at him as the leader of the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, nowadays in his career, now he only wrestles pretty much once a year. or, you know, right. a couple times a year, but pretty much, you know, Mania is the only time he wrestles, but he's still, like, you don't really hear complaints. When a lot of wrestling fans, you know, when the part-timers come back around for Mania, a lot of people, like, complain about it. But no one complains about The Undertaker coming back. One, it's always an awesome match. The greatest entrance pretty much in history, you know, not just at WrestleMania, just ever, you know, and probably one of the, probably the best gimmick that's still able to be a gimmick. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely. It's like the last old school gimmick.
And the funny thing is people still buy into it. And it's just even through all the character changes that he's gone through, the Undertaker at WrestleMania 29 is essentially, you know, the same Undertaker that debuted at WrestleMania 7. Survivor Series, but, you know, his first WrestleMania, WrestleMania 7, which, by the way, was a favorite WrestleMania of mine, and I believe maybe the second WrestleMania I saw all the way through. So I remember this. I remember the first match. Yeah. I remember the main event was Hulk Hogan, Sergeant Slaughter for the WWF title.
And for the Pride of America, bro.
And for the Pride of America, bro. because Slaughter was a Saddam Hussein sympathizer. Crazy storyline.
Insane.
But back on topic here. Undertaker debuted for the WWE, I believe, in 1991, I believe.
I think it was 91. It was either 91 or 90. I can't say for certainty, though.
Yeah, but been around. I think it was 91 because WrestleMania 7, I believe, is in 92, March 92 or whatever. Okay. But if we get that wrong, fans, sorry that we forgot a year, all right? Just give us a break. But anyway, he debuted at Survivor Series. I remember his original manager was Brother Love. Who's Bruce Pritchard to all the, like, the, you know, real smarks. And then within that year, though, he became, like, the biggest, you know, star in a sense of, like, I think they're building him up to be the number one bad guy, I think, was his role.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, of course, you know, you still had Hulk Hogan as, like, the WWF champion, you know, reigning and defending and never – I still don't think he ever lost it yet. I think he was still champion. He lost it to Slaughter. But, you know, he was still the main company guy, the champion.
For sure.
And he, you know, he won it back from Slaughter at this WrestleMania. But having said that, they go into WrestleMania 7, the first one Undertaker ever took part in, and he was the heel at the time, the bad guy.
Right.
All right. And he's going up against a legend, a guy that fans have always loved and admired, Jimmy Superfly Snuka, a guy who, you know, inspired every wrestler probably ever to lace up a pair of boots at the time. You know, even Mick Foley, you know, infamously when he jumped off the steel cage in Madison Square Garden, and Mick Foley's like, I need to, you know, join professional wrestling. I need to be a wrestler because of that moment. So Undertaker's right. going up against this veteran. First of all, I wonder what do you think Snuka was feeling?
Snuka? Oh, you know, probably nothing compared to the Undertaker. I don't want to take away from this match or put this in a negative light, but I'm sure Snuka was just kind of, you know, doing the job. You know what I mean?
Because there was no build up to this match. It was just one.
No build up to this match. Undertaker's still relatively new at this point. The streak's not the streak at this point. You know, there's really not a lot of mystique around this match.
Yeah, because I mean, it was just pretty much, I think, there was like back then at WrestleMania, they would have matches on there. It's not like it is today. They would have more matches and they'd be shorter and they wouldn't really mean anything, though. You know what I mean?
Right.
There would be no real build up to the matches back in the day. It was just kind of like, let's put a bunch of matches and we'll focus on, you know, just to build up to the main events. What this was. It was early on in the card, and Undertaker went in there, bad guy, boom. I think he beat Jimmy Superfly Snuka, the future Hall of Famer, in under 5 minutes, I believe. And Jimmy Superfly goes the springboard off the top rope. Undertaker catches him with and then gives him a tombstone piledriver. And there you go.
And that's that.
The first win in the streak, which wasn't still a streak yet, But later on, Undertaker would actually go, I believe, at a, was it Survivor Series later that year? And he would actually...
That's correct. And he beat Hulk Hogan to become the WWF champion.
For the first time. Look at that. And it was exactly... 1 year. Exactly a year. Yeah, exactly a year after he debuted. And man, what a year. What a year in the company, you know? You go
that's a good rookie year in the WWF.
It's pretty good rookie year. Pretty good rookie year. Let's actually say this, just for shits and giggles. Who do you think has had the better debut year? Do you want to go with Undertaker or The Shield? Who's had the better debut year?
Oh well, I mean, Undertaker did win the WWF Championship in his rookie year, so that kind of gives him the edge. That's not to take away from them
and against Hulk Hogan.
Against Hulk Hogan, that's true. That's a pretty good point. But with that said, if we're talking first years, Kurt Angle, no question.
Oh, yeah. Kurt had a great first year.
Yeah, his first year was amazing. You know what? But that's something that we can definitely talk about coming up in future episodes.
Look at this. This is becoming a trend here on the announce table. We figure out what our next episode is going to be on our current episode.
It's pretty great.
Okay, so we round her out that year. Taker drops the belt at some point, and we come up to WrestleMania 8. WrestleMania 8 was a big deal. The next victim in the streak was Jake the Snake Roberts, recently announced as a Hall of Fame class of 2014 inductee.
So that's two Hall of Famers already.
He's already gone through two Hall of Famers. Like, you know, yeah. this is pretty good. See, well, do you remember what led up to this match, Kyle?
You know, I can remember very fuzzy. I know that there was some sort of an alliance between Jake and The Undertaker. Against who, I can't recall. But I know that the alliance fell apart, and that's pretty much what led to this match.
Wasn't Jake the Snake, like, teaching The Undertaker how to, take out the Ultimate Warrior or something like that?
That sounds right. Now that I hear it, I can remember Ultimate Warrior doing his coked out promos a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. Another future Hall of Famer this year, Warrior. and I believe after the war, I think Warrior left the company actually shortly after this. Jake started feuding with Randy Savage. I remember, and. I remember Jake was about to take a steel chair and one time and smack Miss Elizabeth with it. I believe Randy was incapacitated or it was a sneak attack or something. And right when Jake's about to strike Miss Elizabeth with the chair, the Undertaker appears and grabs the steel chair from him. And then Jake, a few weeks later, I believe, calls out the Undertaker on an episode of The Funeral Parlor after he gave Paul Bearer, rest in peace, the late, great Paul Bearer, a DDT. And then whacking the Undertaker. So this was
the builder. Undertaker's boy.
And that was Undertaker's, like, what? At the time, what was Paul Bearer? Was it the story he was his father, or was he just, like, a weird guy?
Nah, the father thing hadn't been introduced by this point.
Okay, no father thing yet. But the match actually, I remember watching this, because the WWE put out a great DVD called The Streak, which has, when Undertaker went 20-0, they put out this DVD of the 20 matches, which made me think that they wanted to end it at 20-0. But we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I definitely want to get to that.
Yeah, definitely. In this match, the Undertaker survived two DDTs from Jake the Snake Roberts, which at the time, the DDT was like, when he put that on you, you're not getting up from that.
If that sounds underwhelming, it wasn't back then.
No, not in the slightest. That was a huge deal to get up from 2D, because that was back in the day also where you really didn't get up from a finish of a move.
No. It's not like it is now. Like, it's a freaking video game.
Yeah, where you
with
can
infinite
just,
finishers.
Yeah, you can kick out of as many finishes as you want. You know what's funny is, like, it's called a finisher.
Finish the guy. It's all in the name, man. All in the name.
Undertaker wakes
survived up. Two of Jake's finishers.
Yes. And then gives Jake the DDT, Tombstone Piledriver out of the WWE, pretty much. Because that was Jake's last match for almost 4 years.
Wow.
In the WWE. I guess he left for, you know, to battle with his, personal problems at the time. But right, yeah, right. I mean, that was the notch two in the Undertaker's belt. And, you know, forgive me, fans, if I'm a little, you know, my memory's a little fuzzy on some of these, because these are early on matches that I had to go back and look at. So I wasn't there for a lot of this buildup. Were you, Kyle?
No, not a lot of it. I mean, I'm sure I was watching it, but like so young that I didn't absorb any of it really, you know?
Yeah.
This is way before Brad's time, and this is even a few years before my time. So
yeah, it's just, so, you know, we're trying to catch up. And when we get to the more current matches, I'm sure we'll have more commentary. But the next match, WrestleMania 9, which was the world's largest toga party, if I remember correctly.
Oh God, WrestleMania 9.
WrestleMania 9. I think the main event was Bret Hart, Yokozuna, for the WWE title.
Yeah, that's correct.
And
that
then
is correct. Yokozuna won, then Hulk Hogan came out and saved the day, like, had an impromptu title match and won in, like, super fast time. And
like, 17 seconds or something like that. And
the audience let out a collective, what?
Like, what did we just see? It didn't even make sense. Hogan had a black eye, too, at the time, or something. I just remember that was a weird thing. It was a weird. But
it's weird. When I have fever dreams, it's always said at WrestleMania 9. It's just a weird time in WWF history.
It definitely was. But it was also the debut of Jim Ross. And I remember
Which was a great thing.
Macho Man came out, like, with people carrying him. And I think he was eating grapes. And Bobby Heenan came out on an elephant backward. A lot of pageantry at WrestleMania 9. And
so, yeah.
I hate to say this.
You got that right.
Typically, now, especially in recent memory, Undertaker has pretty much the best match on the card all the time now.
Yes.
At WrestleMania. But this match, I think, might have been the worst match in the history of the streak. This match was
no question.
The Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez. Yes, that's right. That's why I paused for a second. No one remembers Giant Gonzalez from my generation. But I believe he was almost 8 feet tall. Or he was something crazy. He was super tall.
He was definitely a freak of nature.
Yeah.
Did not belong in a wrestling ring.
Yeah. And I believe the build-up to it was after defeating Kamala, his manager, and a new I'm trying to read on this. Pretty much Giant Gonzalez debuted at the Royal Rumble, and his interference in the bout caused Undertaker to be eliminated. So he pretty much eliminated Undertaker from the Royal Rumble, and that was pretty much what set up this match. This is the only bout at WrestleMania where the Undertaker did not gain a conclusive victory, because it did end in disqualification. So could almost be the asterisk, if there was one, on the streak, because Undertaker technically didn't win.
He
won, but he didn't win by pinfall or submission.
This match is very forgettable. There's really nothing about this match that is like outstanding whatsoever, aside from the fact there was like an 8-foot dude in a costume that had a body airbrushed onto it.
Yeah, with
so
like hair.
Body,
he looked like
a synthetic body.
Have you ever seen the movie Harry and the Hendersons? He looked like Harry from Harry and the Hendersons. Look that movie up. The bout ended by disqualification. Harvey Whippleman actually gave Giant Gonzalez a chloroform soaked rag, which he used on the Undertaker.
Sounds like WrestleMania 9.
It sounds like WrestleMania 9. Wow. I believe, but the Undertaker did, his entrance, like at all WrestleManias, was amazing. He came in on a chariot with vultures, which is pretty, with a vulture.
Yeah, I remember that. That was badass, actually.
And if this match wasn't a big stinker enough, they actually feuded up until SummerSlam that year, when the Undertaker finally defeated Giant Gonzalez cleanly. So, oh boy.
And then Giant Gonzalez went on to do great, great things.
Oh yes, he became the biggest superstar in professional wrestling history. But that was WrestleMania 9. WrestleMania 10, no Undertaker. After three straight WrestleManias, no Undertaker. He opted out of 10 for some reason, but he was back. He did come back at WrestleMania 11, the fourth match in the streak, where he fought the main eventer from WrestleMania 2, King mm-hmm. Kong Bundy. King Kong yes, Bundy. King Kong Bundy
was wrestled a member a long of the billion-dollar corporation at this point under the guise of Ted DiBiase.
DiBiase, the million-dollar man. Do you remember the build-up to this match, Kyle?
No, not really. I got to be honest. I just know that the million-dollar corporation was involved.
There was some incident at the Royal Rumble in 94, and then I believe like the Ted DiBiase brought a fake Undertaker in for a little while.
Okay, yes, I do remember that. I do remember that.
And then which Undertaker eventually, the real Undertaker defeated the fake Undertaker, or as I like to call him, Underfaker. And it didn't stop, though, Ted DiBiase and the Million Dollar Corporation. At 95 Royal Rumble, a year later, King Kong Bundy attacked Undertaker following a match that he had with IRS, which helped the corporation, the Million Dollar Corporation, steal Undertaker's urn. So I think this match was all to try to get Undertaker's urn back.
Right, and the urn's the power. I'm sure people that aren't familiar with this time frame, the urn is the power. That's where Undertaker, all his strength comes from, all his mystical abilities, supernaturalness.
Yes, is the urn. We didn't talk about the urn. Urn typically carried by Paul Bearer around, but yeah, so I don't remember this match that well. I actually watched WrestleMania 11 really recently, like a few days ago.
Right.
And I remember not being too enthused by this match. I don't even remember how it ended, but I do remember that The Undertaker did win. I remember that.
We can confirm that. We know that because we're doing this podcast.
We know that because there's a streak, obviously.
Right.
But The Undertaker was able to win the bout. I think he hit King Kong Bundy with some kind of body slam and then a clothesline was his finish
really?
For that match.
Really? And with the tombstone, huh?
Yeah, it was like a body slam and a clothesline to end the match. And then ultimately, The Undertaker would regain control of the urn, you know, which he actually then melted into a gold chain. Which had,
because,
yeah.
You had to keep up with the times.
Got to keep up with the times, you know what I mean? Yeah. Undertaker was feeling that American badass back then, and he just hadn't gotten fully into it.
He's actually ahead of time because he was down with the bling bling before bling bling was bling blinging.
Before bling bling was blang blanging, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And this, and I think there must have been some fascination with The Undertaker wrestling another big guy. Because, you know, Giant Gonzalez, I could see why they on paper that would look good. Like Giant versus Giant. And then King Kong Bundy, another Giant versus Giant type thing. And they wanted to continue that trend at WrestleMania 12. You remember who his WrestleMania 12 opponent was, right?
Of course, Big Sexy Diesel.
Big Sexy Diesel. Who was the W? Was he the WWE? It was
not at this time. No,
it was. Let's see. Okay, tell me what you remember about WrestleMania 12.
WrestleMania 12. The whole event. What I remember is Bret, Shawn for the title in the Iron Man match, which we went over in our award-winning episode last time.
Yes, it already did win an award. That's true.
Of course, Undertaker and Diesel. What else happened that night? I think Austin competed against. Oh, man, I can't remember the porter, the guy who was
Savio Vega.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
That's all. Those are the only three matches I can remember. Oh, and Goldust and Roddy Piper. I remember that.
Oh yeah, in the Hollywood backlot brawl.
Yeah.
where they had like the O.J. Simpson footage spliced into it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let me see. If I can figure out what the buildup was. Okay, here it is. According to my research here, when The Undertaker was about to win the WWE Championship from Bret Hart at the 1996 Royal Rumble, Diesel ran to the ring, ran to ringside and pulled the referee out, which caused the match to end in a disqualification. The following month at In Your House 6, Undertaker got his revenge when he pulled Diesel down through the floor of the ring during his steel cage championship bout against Bret Hart.
I think he did. He did a Diesel one up on that one.
He definitely did.
I think through the ring is a little more vicious than out of the ring.
Yeah, you got to pull him through because then it's like where are they going to go when they get pulled through the ring? You know, to the depths of hell, it would seem.
Exactly.
The match was a little bit of akin to the to the match that he had with Jake the Snake Roberts, because after two jackknife power bombs, Undertaker would still not give up. He ended up hitting a choke slam and then a tombstone to win at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and that was, I don't know if that was officially Diesel's last match, but I think that was pretty much the last thing he did on a grand scale during that first run in WWF.
Yeah, yeah. He left the company just a couple months later, right after Scott Hall, and then he joined up with Hogan, joined the New World Order.
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, this was Undertaker's first WrestleMania match that actually went over 10 minutes.
Okay, okay. That's a good piece of information right there. And I do remember this match, and I remember enjoying it for the most part. It's definitely not one of his better WrestleMania matches, but it's fun. You know, it's a good match. It's worth watching.
And here's the thing. I think, you know, people give Kevin Nash, a.k.a. Diesel, a lot of flack for not being a great worker is what I hear a lot of people say. But I've always enjoyed his work. I always like watching Kevin Nash. And I don't know if it's his in-ring work or if it's just I buy into the character so much. But I always have liked Diesel. But this definitely wasn't one of my favorite WrestleMania matches from The Undertaker. But The Undertaker definitely, I still enjoyed the match. I agree with you. I enjoyed the whole match.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I liked it. I liked it a lot. And this comes up now. Now, if Giant Gonzalez wasn't enough, Kyle, if King Kong Bundy wasn't enough, if Big Daddy Cool Diesel wasn't enough, they had to continue the streak. And Undertaker's sixth match in the streak, he faced Sid, Psycho Sid, Sid Justice, Sid Vicious. Sid I don't Vicious. Know which one he was at this time. But
I think it was Vicious, but it really doesn't matter.
He might have just been Sid at this time. I don't even know. I believe he was Sid just for a while, which is a strange name. The name Sid, I'm not a fan of the name, to be honest with you. I don't like the name.
Nothing good comes from that name. There's no one named Sid that's done anything worth anything ever.
Except jump off the second turnbuckle buckle and break his leg in like four frames. this is actually okay, we talked about this. On the announce the last episode is Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels thought they were going to go into WrestleMania 13, right, for the WWE Championship, but Shawn Michaels had the knee injury and right. He had to vacate the title, and this kind of and I believe this was in between it was between a short period. I can't remember when Michaels vacated the title. But I know they only had like a few, like, you know, like a few months to figure out like what they're going to do for WrestleMania. And, the Undertaker, was actually the number one contender for the title based upon being the runner up in the Final Four match, which was something they did after, the Royal Rumble that year. Let's see. And a few months before the event, Bret Hart won the match but lost the title to Sid following the following night due to interference of Stone Cold Steve Austin, which would set up their WrestleMania 13 match, the submission match. A steel cage match, though, was held between Bret Hart and Sid Vicious, with it already being known that The Undertaker was going to fight Sid and Bret and was going to fight Austin at WrestleMania. But because Sid wound up winning the match, this WrestleMania bout was for the WWE Championship.
Right. So this match, you know, all that summed up is this match is a result of, like, haphazard booking and just, like, scrambling to get something in place for WrestleMania because of Shawn Michaels' non-involvement in the event.
Yeah, and it was pretty much like I think the belt changed hands like four times like in this period. It was some crazy number of how many times the belt changed hands, and it was just like you said, it was just scrambled eggs booking, you know what I mean? Like they were just trying to figure something out. But yeah, during the match I believe Shawn Michaels was actually on commentary.
That was his contribution.
Yeah, and it and I think Bret came out for some reason and right when Sid was about to give The Undertaker the Sid Powerbomb, he stopped to go over and attack Bret Hart, but was given a hot shot into the ropes, by Bret Hart. The move stunned Sid enough to allow The Undertaker to hit this tombstone piledriver to win the WWE Championship. And it was actually Undertaker's second time he held the title. So he won it sometime after WrestleMania 7 and didn't get it again until WrestleMania 13.
Right. So there's a lot of firsts going on here. This is the first time Undertaker officially main events WrestleMania.
Yes.
And it's also the first time that he walks away with the championship from WrestleMania.
Yeah, so it was a pretty big deal, honestly, for Taker. I mean, you know, the company, I mean, at WrestleMania, if you walk out the champion, mm-hmm. you know, it's pretty much you're being, it's the whole company's being put on your back.
Sure, sure. You know, yeah, he was the hero of the night. This was a banner moment in his career. And that pose of him in the middle of the ring with the championship belt and the purple lighting is iconic.
Yeah.
Probably yeah. more so than the actual match. Probably I think the takeaway from this is just the whole pageantry of it and the fact that it's so many firsts for his career. More so than the actual match.
No, yeah, no, most definitely. And you know, I remember the Sid match and WrestleMania 13, mainly for I remember WrestleMania 13 definitely for the Bret Hart, Steve Austin
match.
Absolutely. But you know, I think, you know, Undertaker and Steve Austin kind of came out of that pay-per-view as the two top guys in the company, even though Bret could still be in that picture. But they kind of both came out looking like $1 million.
I completely agree with you. I think WrestleMania 12 was important to both of them becoming the superstars that they became pretty shortly after.
Now, Undertaker, I believe, ended up losing the title to Bret Hart at SummerSlam, which we talked about again on that Montreal Screwjob episode. You need to go listen to that, guys. This actually set up a match between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker at Bad Blood in the first ever Hell in a Cell match, which marked the debut of Undertaker's brother, Kane. Now, I believe there was some buildup to that match where Paul Bearer was coming out saying, "He's alive, Undertaker! Your brother, yeah. Kane, Undertaker."
They had a nice, they were teasing. They did a really, really, really well done tease before this whole thing actually happened.
Did you watch this live? Did you? Did you happen to see this match?
Yeah. I think I caught most of this as it was happening. And it was great. I mean, the Kane introduction is one of the storylines that I remember most fondly of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I remember seeing the next night on Raw, the Kane debuted, and I was like, "Whoa, that guy yes. looks like he could kick Undertaker's ass."
Yeah, no, it was beautiful. I mean, it really is. I mean, that whole thing was poetry, and the fact that they looked like, you know, like the immovable object and the unstoppable force, you know.
Yeah, and they looked like they were brothers. Like they looked like these were yeah. like twin brothers, or you know, I know they were, it was like younger brother, but they looked like twin brothers, except you know one had a mask on.
Right.
They just looked like they were evenly matched, but it looked like Kane was a little bigger, a little more in shape, and could kind of. I was like, "Whoa, Taker! I'd get out of that ring, bro."
Yeah, no, Kane looked like he could definitely kick Undertaker's ass, which is rare.
Yeah, and Undertaker kept saying, "I will not fight my brother. I will not fight my flesh and blood. I will never do that." You know, da 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 da. But he did. He ended up fighting The Undertaker. Kane, I believe, actually cost his brother a chance at the WWE Championship when he interfered in that casket match between Undertaker and Shawn Michaels, which was Shawn's, like, one of Shawn's, you know, what kind of was the end of Shawn's career in the Attitude Era, pretty much.
Right.
Then following the bout is when Kane set that casket on fire when Undertaker was
awesome.
Still in it. Remember?
Still awesome.
And then they go to scramble to get Undertaker out. And they, you know, they take the fire extinguisher, put the fire out, da 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 da. Open it, no Undertaker.
Man, yeah, I remember this vividly. This stuff is great.
How did they do that? There were a few things like I don't understand. I never understood how they did that.
Don't ask me, man. It was magic, you know? Undertaker's
yeah.
mythical. That's how we did it.
Okay. I'll believe that one for now. but yeah, they ended up finally Undertaker wants to fight Kane at WrestleMania 14 and
yes,
brother versus brother.
For the first time.
First time. But prior to the start of the match is when Pete Rose came out to mock all the fans in Boston. Remember that? And
yeah.
It was kind of the start of the Pete Rose saga in the WWE.
Yeah.
And received a tombstone from Kane.
Yep.
Boom. Tombstoned a future WWE Hall of Famer. Oh, did we keep count on our Hall of Famer count? How many Hall of Famers has Undertaker defeated up until now?
Let me take a quick look. I think no, it's only two at this point.
Only two still. Okay, we're still at two. Jake the Snake and Jimmy Superfly Snuka. But there are a couple in there who I'm sure will be in the Hall of Fame soon. But yeah.
Absolutely.
Undertaker goes on to win this bout. It took three tombstone pile drivers and I believe two choke slams to beat Kane. Kane actually, I think, set up at the end of the match and then gave Undertaker another tombstone and onto a steel chair, I think. I think that's what happened.
Yes, yes. Listen, if you're listening and you haven't seen this match, see it. It's great. It is awesome. It's like such a microcosm of one of the greatest eras in professional wrestling era history. And these two guys are a big part of that. And mm-hmm. I really dearly love this match and the whole build up to this match. I think it's great.
I love that whole WrestleMania. Really, I love that whole WrestleMania.
Yeah, no, that WrestleMania is awesome.
That WrestleMania is so awesome. And a year later, the Ministry of Darkness was at an all-time high, which was led by The Undertaker. Other members were Midian, for a while Naked Midian. There was who else? The Alkalites, which was Farouk and Bradshaw. Viscera. They had a nice little thing going. And Undertaker was the leader of the corporate ministry. I mean, of the
just
ministry.
The ministry.
Just the ministry. I'm sorry. I always call it the corporate ministry. They were involved with a few, with another group. And they were heel. They were a heel group, I believe the ministry was at the time, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Weren't they?
Yeah.
And,
they were.
And then they were in another feud. They were in a feud, though, with another heel group, the Corporation, which was led by Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon. And I remember The Undertaker was kind of like stalking the McMahon family and kidnapping Stephanie and all kinds of great stuff. All kinds of really family-friendly television. And the Big Boss Man was an enforcer for the Corporation. And so for some time, this set up a match between the two, in a Hell in a Cell,
which would be the first Hell in a Cell match at WrestleMania for Undertaker and period.
Yeah. And it was the first time since WrestleMania 7 that Undertaker was also the heel going into WrestleMania, fighting another heel, which is interesting. WWE doesn't do that a lot because it's kind of, and we talked about that a little bit before. It's kind of hard to do heel on heel stuff.
Yeah.
Because fans are like, I want to see them both get killed.
right, yeah.
But I remember Hell in a Cell. I do remember Paul Bearer was at ringside with The Undertaker. I remember the Hell in a Cell match was crazy because after The Undertaker beat the Big Boss Man with the Tombstone Piledriver, he decided to hang him.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they got into pretty hot water for doing this, actually.
Oh yeah, I remember the Brood came down from the top of the arena or something, and they cut a hole in a cage, and then they dropped the noose down, and then they
this is so Attitude Era.
And then Paul Bearer raised the cage up, and they hung the Big Boss Man.
Yep. And he was all squirming around and just looking terrible.
And then he went still. He was still at the end.
They,
I was like,
oh, they went all out. They left no stone unturned.
Whoa, yeah. Looking back at that, I'm like, what the hell?
Sounds like a Vince Russo idea.
Oh, it's got Vince Russo written all over it. But you know, WrestleMania 16 was the next WrestleMania. The Undertaker was not at that one, so he went at 10 and he went at 16. He came back, though, at 17. WrestleMania 17, right here for where I'm recording right now in Houston, Texas. And hometown, H-Town. WrestleMania 17 is also, was stylized WrestleMania X7, which always bugged me.
Yeah, same here.
I'm like, no, it's 17. It's not 10-7.
Dude, you're so right. Not 10-7.
You jackasses. It's regarded as one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time.
Completely agree with that sentiment.
The main event was Rock Austin 2 at 2. WrestleMania. Yeah. Where Austin famously decided to turn heel at the end of the night, which was not a good idea. But but Triple H was The Undertaker's opponent this evening, and it was actually the first time Triple H was in the WrestleMania match with The Undertaker. They later on, of course, have two other matches. But I think this was I think Undertaker was American Badass Undertaker now. He returned as the American Badass.
Full swing American Badass.
And the problems began when Triple H was bragging about that he had beaten everyone there is to beat in the WWE, which is something I think the WWE likes to do. They like to get their main heel out there and say, I've done it all. No one else think I can, beat in this. And there's always like the one guy, everyone's like, well, you haven't beaten him. And we all know
that's
how
that's how they brought Goldberg in.
Yeah, with The Rock. Yeah. The Rock has done it all. The Rock has done it. Oh, and then do. Great. That was a great night, actually. I love that moment. It was like right after WrestleMania 19. But anyway, another podcast. So Undertaker comes out because he took exception to the comments of Triple H that he beat everybody. And Triple H thought he outsmarted the Undertaker when he placed an order of protection for Stephanie McMahon on him. However, Kane kidnapped Stephanie, threatened to throw her off a balcony until William Regal, who was the commissioner at the time, made the match at WrestleMania.
Huh. William Regal, huh?
Yeah. Oh, good old William Regal. And this is still Attitude Era, so it sounds about right. I remember Motorhead performed the game's entrance music, which was pretty cool, actually. I'm not going to lie. Undertaker came out riding his motorcycle.
Naturally.
This bout, I'm reading here in my notes, this bout featured one of the longest referee bumps in history. He was unconscious when Undertaker hit Triple H with a tombstone. That's fine. I found that interesting. One of the longest referee bumps in history.
So meaning that he was just out for the longest?
Yeah, he was out because you remember like Triple H and Undertaker started like going out to the crowd and wrestling, and they were standing on the stage and.
This match got crazy.
Yeah, Triple H was hit Undertaker with a sledgehammer in the head and remember busted him open. There were a lot of stuff, a lot of things that happened. But finally, the Undertaker got Triple H in the perfect position to hit him with the last ride, which is the power bomb. That's the one thing I like about The Undertaker. He always evolves with his gimmick and his character. He always gets new finishers. It was forever just the tombstone. Yes. Then he got the choke slam. So he had the choke slam and the tombstone. Then it was the last ride he implemented, which is a power bomb. And it worked for him, though. It definitely worked for
perfectly.
Him.
And it was a power bomb with a twist because he would lift him up a little bit higher.
Yeah. Really, yeah. And then kind of really just use that extension of his arms and boom, hit him down on the mat. Aftermath of this match, I remember Triple H and Austin formed the Power Trip, if you remember.
Oh, man.
Yeah. The tag team.
The Power Trip.
Of Triple H and Steve Austin. How'd you feel about the Power Trip?
Ill advised. It's not a good idea.
Yeah. Weird that they teamed.
WrestleMania 17, to me, is the best WrestleMania, and it was swiftly followed by some of the most questionable booking in this time period.
Yeah, definitely. I remember Austin was the champion, and then Triple H won the Intercontinental title, and then Kane and Undertaker were tag champs. And they had that match where all the gold was on the line.
Yeah, just really, really odd.
Yeah, and then the Undertaker started feuding with Diamond Dallas Page shortly after this. And that was the beginning of the invasion angle, which we're definitely going to have to cover soon.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe at this time, so the invasion angle's over, and Ric Flair was the guy who ended up buying half of WWF some kind of way.
Yeah, some kind of way.
I don't really know. Like, well, I forget. Oh, I think when Stephanie and Shane bought WCW and ECW respectively, they sold their shares to Ric Flair. He was the consortium. You know
what? That's actually pretty good continuity for professional wrestling.
That actually is great. Actually, that's the best, I think, continuity they've ever had in the WWE. Yeah. So, yeah, he was co-owner with the company along with Vince McMahon. Flair did not like the way The Undertaker was behaving at the time. Shame on you, Taker. Had no way out.
Undertaker, with your leather pants.
With your leather pants and Kid Rock and Limp Bizkit theme songs. At No Way Out, Undertaker was going to use a lead pipe against The Rock. But Ric Flair not only stopped him, but hit The Undertaker with the lead pipe. And this led to Undertaker to challenge Ric Flair. And I remember Flair was refusing a lot. Flair would say, no, I'm not going to wrestle you. I'm not going to wrestle you. And then Taker, I think, beat up Arn Anderson and David Flair. And like
oh, yeah, I remember that. That was brutal.
Yeah, and then finally, yeah, especially the David Flair one. And finally, Ric Flair was like, all right, I'll fight you, Taker. And Flair, I think, accidentally hit like a fan or something because he got so hyped up in the process.
When it's Ric Flair, it's called wooed up. He got so wooed up in the process.
He got wooed up in the process, exactly. And he was arrested or something like that. And there was just a lot of stuff. And he and Vince were still going back and forth for the power of the WWE. And I don't know, like, and temporarily.
It was a complicated time in Flair's life.
Yeah, and temporarily Vince was given full control just for this match, and the board of director. Oh yeah, board of directors gave Vince full control of the company temporarily because that happens in real life, and and Vince immediately made this match into the no disqualification match.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Take that, Flair.
Take that, Flair, Richard. Richard Fleer, if that is your real name, because it is. For the second year in a row, Undertaker makes his American Badass entrance. And I remember Arn Anderson came out during the match to try to get some revenge on Taker. And despite his interference in the match, Undertaker still beats the old man Ric Flair. And I say the old man Ric Flair. Ric Flair is probably my favorite wrestler of all time. But I remember not liking everything that he was doing at this time. I didn't like the whole co-owner thing. I thought it was a misusage of Flair.
I wasn't crazy about it either.
Yeah.
Now, is this when the streak became the streak? Like when people actually started to acknowledge the fact that Undertaker lost at WrestleMania?
Yes. At the end of this match, JR says, "The Undertaker is now at WrestleMania 10-0.
Yeah, and I remember Undertaker doing the thing where he, like, counted his fingers.
Yeah.
It was really cool.
Yeah. And he was, like, 10-0. Yeah. That was actually pretty cool. I actually did like that a lot. Undertaker, boom, wins it. And I believe weeks later on Raw, or maybe the next night, Flair and McMahon had a match as the main event of Raw to figure out who would be the sole owner.
The proper owner.
Yeah. I think maybe that was actually before the next WrestleMania, because I think there was the brand split actually after this. Flair was around for the brand split. Yeah, excuse me on that. Yeah, the brand split later on. And then I think Undertaker was drafted to Raw as the number one pick, right?
Man, I'm fuzzy on the details.
Flair, I remember during the draft, Flair had some really interesting picks. He had like Lita, The Undertaker, NWO, just weird that Devon Dudley, or no, Bubba Ray Dudley.
Oh yeah, they broke up the Dudleys.
Yeah, that was smart.
Yeah,
that was
stupid.
Yeah, super. And then Reverend Devon was the gimmick.
Terrible.
Which though led into the debut of Batista. Let's not forget. Which I don't know how big of a Batista fan you are, but that's what happened.
No. Boo.
Yeah. Batista? Is that what you're calling?
Yeah. Batista.
Yeah. Anyway, but this led into our WrestleMania 19, which Undertaker was still the American Badass, and Limp Bizkit actually played the Undertaker out to the ring for this match. I believe.
Fuck. Awesome.
Yeah, great. I mean, well, okay, let's actually put this in context. In 2003, that was pretty awesome.
Fair enough.
2003, that was pretty cool. Originally, this match was actually supposed to be a tag team match. Undertaker and Nathan Jones versus Big Show and A-Train. A-Train, also known as Albert, also known as Prince Albert, also known as Lord Tensai, also known as Tenzai, also known as Sweet Tea. All under the WWE umbrella.
What a roller coaster.
Why do they keep changing his gimmick? Like, we knew who it was. It's like, I don't understand what the point of that was.
I don't know, man. I guess people just never cling to him and they think they can do something else. I don't know.
Anyway, I'm trying to remember the
build-up. This is a weird spot in the streak for me.
Yeah, I didn't really too much get it. And anyway, Undertaker, something happened to Nathan Jones on Sunday Night Heat, which is back. Yeah, they still had Heat back then in 2003. Nathan Jones was like attacked in the locker room by Big Show and A-Train. They thought this would give him the one-up advantage in the match. And Undertaker came out still, 2-on-1 handicap match to Limp Bizkit, playing Roland. And toward the end of the match, Nathan Jones actually made an appearance and took Big Show out of the ring. And like I think Big booted him or something like that. And kicked A-Train in the face also. And then the Undertaker hit A-Train with a tombstone and... boom, got the victory. Nathan Jones is so not important.
No. And I have a question. If this actually did go down as the tag team match, do you feel that would affect the streak at all? Like, I mean, as far as the prestige of it?
Yeah, because it would be like, it wouldn't technically, but to me it would some kind of way. Like, and it's like, I can't even explain it. It's just kind of like, it almost cheapens the victory that he had to have a teammate. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, yeah. And I, you know, I'm going to just go out on record and say that I don't like that this was a handicap match. I think handicap matches are kind of trashy. They should be reserved for Raw, not WrestleMania, not with Undertaker. So I kind of biased to dislike this match just from the get-go.
Oh, yeah. You know, I tend to agree with you. I'm not especially a handicap at WrestleMania. And it's like, I didn't get what the whole point of knocking Nathan Jones out at Sunday Night Heat was. And I don't know, man. I don't know. Yeah, but I think my least favorite match in the streak was probably this one.
Okay.
Just to put that out there. Then you know, I put this below Giant Gonzalez just because of the buildup of
statement.
It. Yeah, just because I didn't like the whole everything that was going. The match didn't make sense, and it was like the second match on the card. It was just like I wasn't feeling it.
Yeah, no.
This leads up, though, to WrestleMania 20 is the next WrestleMania. And how this came up is Survivor Series 2003, which was actually my favorite Survivor Series of all time. And I say
it's
that
up there,
because,
sure.
I mean, it had Team Angle, Team Lesnar. That was Team Angle, Team Lesnar.
And then it had obviously, what you're getting to, I'll let you get to it.
Yeah, but it was actually John Cena turned face that night. And has been a babyface since then. just putting that out there. 2003 to 2014.
10 years.
Yeah.
10 years and some change now.
Yeah. And also it had Kane versus Shane McMahon in an ambulance match, which I actually really enjoyed.
I love Shane.
I actually like Shane McMahon as a wrestler.
Dude, his matches are pretty much consistently entertaining as hell.
Yeah, and he always takes risks. He actually is a good worker. I believe his drop kicks. I believe his elbows.
Yeah, I like Shane a lot. I always have. I always will. He's a madman.
Yeah, he's definitely a madman. I wonder where he gets it from. But anyway, but this match famously though had Vince McMahon versus The Undertaker in a buried alive match, and I thought it was funny that on Raw, Kane and Shane McMahon were feuding, and on SmackDown, Undertaker and Vince McMahon were feuding, and they both had specialty matches at this pay-per-view. I always found that weird. But yeah, buried alive match, and we talked about it before. A great match. I really enjoyed the Buried Alive match, and the buildup was epic. I loved everything about this pay-per-view. And McMahon really, probably I put this up there as maybe Vince McMahon's greatest match ever. And just because he was selling and he was bloody and I was believing it. He didn't have a lot of offense, which I think played to his advantage, actually. And great match. Undertaker is about to bury Vince McMahon alive to the excitement of many wrestling fans. And I believe like pyro goes off or something like that and scares the Undertaker. He doesn't know it was like a freak accident or something. I remember something like that. Do you?
Yeah. No, you're right.
Okay. I'm making sure I'm not like just talking. And scares Undertaker and then Kane appears.
Correct.
And this was unmasked Kane, by the way, who was a scary looking guy. And he throws Undertaker in. It pulls Vince out, throws Undertaker in. Vince gets in the payloader and dumps all the dirt on Undertaker, buries him alive.
Buries him alive, thus winning the match.
And Undertaker was gone from television, from Survivor Series.
When he was buried, he was the American Badass Biker Undertaker.
He was American Badass Biker Undertaker. That is true. And he was buried, and we were coming up on WrestleMania 20, where it all begins again. And for several weeks up, a bit building up to this match, the Undertaker was Kane was doing promos, and there'd be Undertaker-esque things happening, like lights would flicker, gongs would go off, all kinds of stuff. And finally, I believe Kane challenged Undertaker at a match at WrestleMania, not knowing if Undertaker would be there, and expecting Undertaker not to be there. And, Kane makes his entrance at WrestleMania 20, Madison Square Garden, the first WrestleMania I watched live on pay-per-view. And, all of a sudden, the lights go out. You hear the "oh yes," and Paul Bearer walks out with the druids, with the fire and everything. And Undertaker's back with a slightly longer hair, his trench coat and his hat, and he was back to the dead man gimmick, which
back,
I really great.
Back to his roots.
Back to his roots. And I don't believe the match was that long, but I do remember Undertaker really defeating Kane rather quickly with the tombstone, and the crowd was the loudest pop it's been at the time, because it was like a great moment, just to see the Undertaker back and for him to be and I remember it was an inter-promotional match because it was like Raw and SmackDown.
Right. Yeah, you're so right. Yeah,
a lot of good stuff.
Now, it was a really cool moment, and this was like one of the last pay-per-views that I got for a while before I kind of got out of wrestling for a little bit.
Yeah,
I remember this pay-per-view vividly from top to bottom. Now I do got to say, this was a great moment. I'm not taking away from the moment, but I have to say that the reveal of the returned dead man was a little underwhelming.
Why you say that?
I don't know. Maybe it was the length of the hair. I remember his outfit wasn't like. It wasn't like, I don't know, I was hoping to see something like the Ministry of Darkness Undertaker that had that real gothic look, you know?
Oh, yeah. I can see what you're saying.
Yeah. This was kind of like a straddling the line of the Dead Man and the American Badass, just looks alone. I'm talking strictly the way it looks.
Yeah.
So I was a little underwhelmed by that, but that doesn't really take away from anything.
You know what's my one takeaway from the Dead Man gimmick? With the Undertaker is when he was the American Badass, he did a lot more talking, and the Undertaker is actually really good at promos.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I really enjoy his promos. And when he's been the Dead Man, he doesn't talk.
Right.
And it bothers me, because it's like, you can cut a great promo. You know, I hate that they don't use you as much. But Kyle, having said that, we've gotten through, I believe, what are we at now? We're at 12 victories, 12-0. For the Undertaker. And with that being said, I think, Kyle, we need to continue the next, victories here on the announce table. I think we need to continue them on the next episode. We're already an hour in. I think we have a lot more to talk about. We have WrestleMania 21 through 29 to still discuss, not to mention what we think is going to happen to the streak and much more. I think we need to come back and do another episode.
I think it's only necessary. I mean, this is the Undertaker we're talking about.
I think on that 50 greatest superstars of all time, he was number one. You're talking.
Yeah, that's only right, man. He's the Undertaker.
Yes, you're talking about the Undertaker. So we're going to be back in 2 weeks here on the announce table to talk about the dead man's undefeated streak. Make sure y'all stay tuned for part two of the streak episode. Kyle, I'll see you soon, buddy.
Farewell, my friends.